Welcome everyone to Maddie's Chat Show podcast. I hope you're ready for the next installment. I hope you have a cup of tea and a nice piece of cake, if not cake, a biscuit, and relaxed and ready to listen. Hello, 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 everyone, and welcome to Maddie's Chat Show. How are we doing today? I hope we're all doing well. I do hope you've got a cup of tea and a piece of cake. If not, you've got your water and your fruit, because I know some of you are trying to be really healthy, but as you're aware, I am still enjoying my cake and my tea. So today I've got a wonderful cake. So I'm still thinking about cake. Oh dear, what a time. So I've got a wonderful guest on today. She is a beautiful soul and she is someone that I've just recently gone in contact with. And Marcia is an expert to me around dyslexia a bit more. Now I'm dyslexic, as I've told many people they do know, but there was still always more stuff that I didn't know that this wonderful lady has taught me and given me some great books to look into. And she has her own story about her journey as well. Because all of us dyslexic are talented, and we are like, we've got a hidden talent that we sometimes don't know until later on. So, but we're going to just talk about our different experiences and then hope you enjoy. So Marcia, welcome to my podcast.
Hi. So I'm Marcia Brissett Bailey, and I'm going to talk, as Maddie said, about my lived experience, and it's going to be authentically unique to me. So no dyslexic experience is the same, and for me it's also about your environment. All of these things have factors. So I've known dyslexic in my community, in my tribe, who haven't had the same struggles as me, but they haven't had the same experience as me. We haven't got the same cultural background. So that's one aspect that could make it a different factor. So it's so varied, and obviously education can be varied to what kind of support you get and strategies. So I always say I'm talking from my lived experience. No dyslexia experience is going to be the same, or we're not going to be the same. We are all different. And I use it as an example, it's like a fingerprint. We're all uniquely different. So that's why it's really hard to define dyslexia. So that's a little bit about me. So in the sense that, I always come from talk about me, and I can't represent everybody else, even though people can resonate with some of my experiences and say, I can relate to that. And, you know, as I feel dyslexia, I'm not sure if there's a pure dyslexia, and we can have overlaps or overcurring with other traits such as dyspraxic, dyscalculia, so ADHD,
autism.
So they could be traits, not necessarily a full diagnosis of those other learning differences, so it's so varied and unique. That's what I say.
We are, and that's the thing, all of us are unique generally, even if you've got dyslexia or not, but I think in the dyslexia world as well, we're even more unique as well in our experience, because my experience of it is different to your experience because of the area we live. We live in two separate areas. So our experience of growing up is different as well with how it was looked at, you know, in our communities. So, 100%. You know, where did you kind of grow up, and like where, you know, when did you get first people say diagnosed, isn't it? When did you find that the additional way or normal way of learning wasn't working for you? When did you?
Well, I realized I can only say it because I'm referring to my early days of childhood, and this is going way back to primary school. The initial probably reception year one, year two, which what we call it now, but it wasn't called that at the beginning, but I didn't notice any difference. And I think probably because there was a lot more play, more creative, more, you know, there was the library corner, you did a little bit of reading, but it wasn't nothing too strenuous. Like the teacher was reading, you're playing, you're cutting things out. There was no challenges there that I found, but it's only when I started to go towards year four and five, which would be like the third year, fourth year, if you're like my age group in your 40s, I started to realize there was some difference in the way I saw things and how I was seeing things. I wasn't grasping what it appeared my peers were. Obviously, I didn't talk to my peers about this, but how I feel, the perception I was seeing, that I wasn't reading or grasping things the way they were. So I felt a little bit like an alien, if I'm honest. I felt that I didn't have a belonging because everyone was grasping things. I mean, I couldn't read the time, you know, that was a big thing for me.
Me too. I found it difficult. And it was like, it was the clock that I couldn't read very, but digital, I kind of learned that digital.
Yeah. Way. Yeah, you could say the numbers.
Yeah.
So I was so desperate when it was half past or on the hour. I could do that. Mm. Don't know why I couldn't do quarter past. I just like 15 minutes past or 20 past. I just, I think I needed more time to learn it or someone to help me. But those things wasn't being observed. So those things started to make me more feeling alienated. Oh, you know, I couldn't read the time. I was aware of that. I don't know if anybody else was aware of it. But I feel looking at it, if I was taught, I think I could do it like five past, 10 past, but I just couldn't see that. I couldn't compute all of that. And then also when it came to writing, I felt that I had so many ideas in my head, so many ideas. Yeah. But when it went to put those ideas on the paper, it just wasn't coming through. I was like, I'm writing. I'm like, yeah, no, it's like, it's not computing here. I just can't get this to flow. It's just, and it was all the spelling of things, you know, and dyslexia, don't get me wrong, it's not always about, it's more than just reading and writing. There's so many different things. I'm like, but I just couldn't put pen to paper, what was pencil then, into what was on there, and that's what everyone was looking at.
Did you have to learn how to do the joined up as well, and like having to do the joined up at school at all?
Yeah, I
that
did.
That was really hard for me. It wasn't hard. It was easy. I got the flow of that. That was like, it's the whole thing. But try and put that into like words. That make feel like, well, that doesn't make sense. But it's like, all,
okay. I'd like to copy. So I as long as I could copy it, but it would take me longer. I didn't have so much difficulty with that coordination of the pencil, but I remember writing quite hard at times, quite firmly sometimes to get that flow. And then there was times when I would write really small, so then no one could see my handwriting, because I thought if you can't see, then you won't see the mistakes.
Yeah,
that was an interesting thought. And then then there was something between capital letters and lowercase. So I can't just write straight capital letter. I'd have to write it out in lowercase. And then if that's the request that I have to write in capital, I have to write it out so I can see it. Then I write in capital. I can't seem to flow in straight capital sometimes. Some things I can, there's words I can, it kind of computes. And there's other things, it just won't flow through my hand. I have to see it visually, then I can do it in capital. But just to do it freestyle or freehand, it doesn't work. So these are all things that I was having to deal with as in my primary years. You know, this is not even like as a grown adult. These are things. So for me, to answer your question, I knew there was something quite unique about me, and I had a lot of time to daydream. It's one of the things I talk about a lot now, but that enabled me to be quite creative. But it was, I was daydreaming because I wasn't connecting with the class, so I just tuned out. Because what else was there to do? The teacher's talking, but it's just not happening. And so it's quite, I feel quite sad about it, but obviously it's been part of who I am today. And I've got a little bit of something in my throat, because it's just, it's quite sad that I know it still happens today. And there's a kind of, they call them the daydreamer children.
Daydreamers, but,
but it's not that, it's just that you're not, the class style or learning style doesn't just meet your needs. And it's how in a class of 30, how do you capture all of those children's needs? And I wanted to be there. I love school, that's the funny thing. I loved words, I loved writing. I dreamed of being able to be a writer. I loved books, so there was nothing wrong with the wanting to learn, and not, I wasn't lazy in that kind of, I was motivated, but it just wasn't happening. I wanted to happen, but it wasn't happening. So that's really when I identified there was something different about me, but I didn't know what it was. And my parents didn't know what it was. And it was when I was transitioning to leave, and I've actually got the report, and it's something that I'm writing about. It was the 3rd of June, I remember. I won't say the date.
The year.
I said the date, but it says, Marcy is slow on this, or Marcy is really trying, but still no progress. Surely there's a sign there. Marcy's, you know, she's trying all of her best, but she's not progressing. Now, to me, that's a sign. That's a clear sign, something matching up.
Yeah.
But obviously they didn't see it, and I don't want to go into what they didn't see or they saw me and just put a stereotype, or you know, the environment in East London at the time in the 80s, it was like, you know, the working class, what have you. So it could be a whole number of things that I had fitted into, and maybe they thought, well, she's not going to learn anyway, or I don't know. But I feel that I was failed in that aspect. So that's to answer your question. That's when I realized something was different, but I didn't know what it was. But I knew. Hi.
Hi, we're back. I don't know what happened there. This is what technology is all about. You're there, we're gone. And I don't know why. But.
So that's to answer your question. I hope I've given you a fuller picture. Maybe
definitely you have done. So over like your teenage years and stuff, when did you get kind of like told that actually you are unique?
Yeah.
You are unique, and there's a reason for your uniqueness. When did you find that out?
Okay, so we skip out secondary school because that was a bit of a blur. I was there, but I came out with one GCSE, and I feel like I felt really sad by that whole experience. Yeah. We're gonna move on to that because I wanted to, but I still had sport. Sport showed me that it's not just about being, I'm great at sport athlete. I was good at sport, so it really showed I was good at something. So I think finding strengths in things, and that really helped me to keep together. You know, because I did develop kind of anxieties. I think that's the first time I say for me, anxiety, especially when I had to read aloud. That's when I started to feel anxious. And yeah, I think my well-being and those kind of things started to have an impact. So and that started from primary school. So I'm going to skip secondary school and go into when, towards the end of secondary school, I knew I wanted to work with children, very caring, compassionate. And we hear that lots of people who are neurodiverse and dyslexic are really compassionate, good empathy, good emotional intelligence, and I just love children. But my career father told me to work in a shoe shop would be good for me, and I just thought,
is it that? Who told you
my career advisor at school? And it just wasn't computing, so I found my own course, and I went down into central London near to King's Cross to a college, at the time it was called Kingsway College, and I went and done a course in youth and community and social work. And alongside that, I retook my GCSEs. So it was a kind of introductory course or preliminary course into that field, because I was thinking social work in the end is possibly a pathway for me. And it was in one of my subjects, I did like history, government, politics, sociology, English literature, subjects that I hadn't touched on in school. But I loved all of them. I loved social sciences and I loved information. So it was my government politics teacher, he said to me, Marcia, I mean, the way you're speaking, the way your understanding is, but when you're writing it, it's just not, it's not matching up.
Yeah.
I'm gonna refer you to somebody to speak to, just to see if, you know, just to do a test. And that's all he said to me. I went to see this lady called Jenny, and she did a few assessments with me. And then she referred me for an educational psychologist report within the school, which I don't know if happens so much now. And it was then I found out and got a diagnosis of dyslexia. I didn't know what it was, like dyslexia. Okay, I was just elated that all of this that I was going through wasn't because I was supposedly stupid. Because for me, that whole process of the early years was about what I couldn't do. They told me, my parents, I wasn't going to academically achieve. So for me, it was a triumph. It's like, I wasn't going to achieve, but here is something saying, these are why I'm having these challenges.
Yeah.
These are why I'm not seeing things in a different way. I felt it, but there wasn't a name to it. Nobody had said it's because of this. They've just a focus. You can't do this. She's not reading so well. She's not progressing in this. It was all of that experience that I had. It can be hard on someone. It's like someone's beating you down.
Yeah.
But they never focused on what I could do. Okay, these are some of Marcia's strengths. Let's work through these. Maybe let's put this to a side, because she's having real difficulty with the time at the moment, or times table, which really I struggle with times table, but I knew some, but not all of them. So let's do that. And it never was like that. So for me, being diagnosed at 16 was just, I was just excited. I was, I was just really just happy to feel like it wasn't me per se that I was broken. It was more that it was the way I was seen and things were processed because of what was dyslexia. So I learned the whole word. I broke it down. It's dyslexia. This is because of this. This comes from the Greek word. I was doing the whole research because I felt I belonged to this now. I was part of this dyslexia. And I'm going to make something of it. I'm going to make something of me. Because I always had, I think throughout my whole of the people telling me I can't, I was always the opposite. I can. Mm-hmm. It's not the way for everybody. Not everybody had that. They really lost them. But it was like I always reverted that way. I was like, no, if you said I can't, I'm going to find a way. So I always had that light at the end of the tunnel. You're telling me I can't, but I'm going to try in some way. Mm-hmm. So this was my tool. This is going to navigate me. And I just ran with it, if you see what I mean. And from there on, I really excelled. I mean, I even got a B in my English literature, you know, and not coming out with any, you know, I love literature. I mean, if I had still had more skills at the time, I think I could have, you know, really got into like a B plus A. Do you see what I mean? Because I think that was my thing because I was studying it so long in my head. That language was just, I just loved the way the poetry was. I liked Maya Angelou. I loved just the way it flowed. I loved words. And I studied it so much because back in the days, we had dictionaries.
Oh my God, I remember those. Really thick ones as well.
Yeah,
the
Collins Dictionary.
Yeah.
So believe me, I went through that and people go, well, if you can't spell something, love, just look in the dictionary.
I'm like,
I can't spell it. So, and I can't even sound it. Phonics weren't working for me, you know.
Yeah.
Okay. There were some words I might get, and then you would go through it, alphabet, L, A, B, C, D. Okay, then it's C. Let me go into C, and then it's A, B, C. I'll be having to do these patterns of rituals to get to the words. And that's how I got to love words, because I would look at what the meanings are, because I don't want to just know the word. I want to know the whole word. Mm-hmm. It's almost from a sensory point of view. You need to have the whole understanding of what the word means to you to be able to then express it. That's why I think literature can work for some of us, because we want to feel it as well and get that feeling and put that, when you put that in the face, paper, make it work, people can get a real picture of what you're saying. And that's how I like to put words. I can have a picture and then I put a word, or I can have a word and then put it with a picture, because it's one of the other thing. It's like a combined thing. Do you see what I mean?
Okay.
So so I was really happy to be diagnosed with dyslexia. So that's my experience of it. So that 16, it really was the starting point for my journey with dyslexia. At being 16. And for
No, so I was gonna talk about like mental health or the new, or you know, around that as well.
Like neurodiversity.
Neurodiversity around that, because you know, so you found out, I'm just gonna move you a little bit forward of like what but then you, because you love the passion, so it makes you know, you've got into education, you know, got into education because you know what this is. And then after that, it's just like there's the other element of, like, I do think a lot of people that do have dyslexia suffer a little bit of it's mental health, not illness, health. Okay, that's a difference.
Yeah, it's important to look after your well-being for sure, because again, everybody's experience is different and depending on the kind of support you have. You know, my parents, they gave me nothing but love, and I think they helped me because they was supportive. They never had, there was no pressure on me to be a doctor or a, you know, some, you know, a particular, you know, profession. And they just wanted the best for me. So by doing that, I didn't have that aspect of pressure. So that was one thing out of the way. But
you're very
then
lucky,
I was quite,
very blessed with that, you know.
Yeah.
You know,
thank
definitely.
You. But in that, they didn't know what dyslexia was. They didn't know how to support me. And I didn't know then. I know now my mum was also dyslexic, so she put a lot of pressure on me, and she wanted me to do so well, but in the sense of like just, you know, achieving to my best ability. But now I know why that was, because she had very similar struggles to me, so she wasn't able to help me in those ways, and nor was my dad, because they didn't have that education kind of knowledge. They wasn't savvy on the support and what was available. I mean, there's bits that I haven't even spoke to you about or mentioned that could be another podcast in terms of some of the things that happened around, ended up having psychotherapy because they thought in my primary school years that the reason why I didn't talk, because I started to selectively mute in aspects of my time because I thought I'd be invisible and then they wouldn't ask me to read and all these kind of things. And so already very early on, when we talk about mental health, I was saying to you about the anxiety, these are what were triggering in different ways, the kind of feeling kicking hold, your heart's palpitating and you're feeling. So I had very felt that from earlier on. So what they thought that was, because my mum was saying what my daughter couldn't read, was that there was something else happening for me, maybe in the home, abuse, and all this kind of stuff. But that was the early days, I think, of the well-being and mental health, like being able to look after that because of the anxiety. So moving forward, for me, mental health, it does come in hand in hand for me in my experience, because every time I've gone to study, whether it's my first degree, not so much my second degree,
just a moment ago you told me that you left school with no GCSEs and now you've got like 2 degrees and a master's. I think we need to go back to that, don't you? We need to go back to school to them teachers and go for that teacher that told you about you need to work in a shoe shop and just say, hi, this is my qualifications, bye bye. Like that.
I know it's not always about, it's not an academic, it's not for everybody. We all have different purposes, and you know, again, that could be another conversation, but it, you know, that's what I chose. It's like I was I'm pushing, because so I sometimes think whether I went down the academic route because I was proving something, but we'll see if we can get back to that. But in terms of the mental health, I think the way the system's set up, I don't think it's set up inclusively to fit in us who are possibly, you know, neurodiverse, depending if you've got the right support. Maybe for some people, private education, smaller classrooms may work. But for me, the kind of linear structure, standardized testing, the memory, I've got short-term memory, so testing me on, you know, my memory, I think I'm good when it comes to maybe talking about it or putting it in a graph or drawing it or putting a poem. But when you're having to be test based on your memory in an exam, it put a lot of pressure on me. The anxiety started to flare up and it makes me feel quite tearful, because I know I just felt like I was imprisoned by, I had to do this to pass, to achieve something. But it was the thing that I didn't have, wasn't my strength. If you gave it to me in a presentation, or I could draw it or something, or even sing a song, you know, like, you know, like find a beat to what I wanted, needed to be presented, to show and demonstrate that I knew my stuff in this area. But to do it in a test, I get sometimes tests are important, but it wasn't the way I learned and was able to project what I, you know, my knowledge. So the mental health for me was quite high, and I feel in my first degree, it really kind of really, I ended up seeing a counselor. And I remember her saying, you know, life is like a thin line, you go one way or the other. But I was really, really, I don't want to say it was a dark place, but I want to say that it was a place that it's not somewhere I'd want to return. And I had to really work my way through that to understand what was going on for me and why I was feeling the way I was, having to retake some exams. It was all about feeling like I'm a failure and all those kind of things. And then again, with my master's, maybe it was a lot to chew. I was full-time working and I was doing a full-time master's and a parent, and running a home and all these kind of things, even though I have a husband. I feel, again, the way the assessments are set up and the way it's structured, it just brought back all those feelings again, how I felt with my first degree. So I just feel that it's the education system is not set up, it's not me what's kind of, as I used before, broken. I feel the system's broken. It's almost like we need to start it again. It needs to be, someone needs to be brave within the system to say, let's just start again and actually let's look at how we are teaching our young people. Let's not just teach them you know, in a kind of linear way. Let's be creative about it. Let's, you know, some children desperately, whether they're this, you know, neurodiverse and not, are bored. I'm going to be honest. They're not stimulated. It's not, if they say, oh, we're in holiday, you know, like if you've got holidays, like, oh, I've got to go back to school. Why is that? Because children can be excited about lots of things, but I think it's the way the system's set up. So I think, and the well-being can come in different ways. ways. So for me, I think there's a definite link with in neurodiversity and that overarching umbrella of all those other neurodiverse where mental health can be quite vigilant and people have got their experience. And I know there's different articles and research and books on mental health and dyslexia. But definitely, I definitely have been on that journey with it and have to work through and sort of self-talk myself to know why some of this thing is so I can move forward and not stay in that place of feeling kind of isolated, feeling misunderstood, because I understand a little bit more about the system. I'm fully more aware about myself, my own learning differences, and how I can apply that by talking to others and speaking and seeking support, if that makes sense. I hope that covers.
It does. I just think another question that's in my head is that, like, we're talking about this, like, I think when we first started talking, I was saying about, like, being a Black person with dyslexia is much, like, I'll be honest, I didn't, it's hard to say that to, you know, like, to other Black people sometimes that you're dyslexic, because a lot of them don't understand, I feel, my kind of experiences, because I've got some of them, like, you know, I've got to, you know, got major degree, masters and blah blah blah, and they're like really ahead, and like for me, I, like, there was a time and I was like, God, I haven't done very well, you know, I've only got this, but I was like, but it was really, you know, it's hard for me to learn, like, they can sit there all night and bang out an essay, like, and I'll be like, nah, I need time. I can't do that. Have you, you know, have you find that it's, do us in our community, in the Bethlehem community, talk about this enough, or do we need to talk about this? Because it does relate together with mental health, and it does relate together about trying to move forward and growing ourselves, I believe, anyway. But sometimes we don't talk about this.
Yeah.
You know?
I do think there's something there, and it's something that I guess I'm a little bit of an activist and a bit of a champion to talk about cultural perspective, regardless of, you know, whether you're Black, there's a different perspective on that. And yes, I was fortunate. My parents didn't have that aspect of pressurizing. What I'm hearing from you, maybe from a cultural perspective, there may have been more about academic, like, you know, like, so you've got that, then the cultural side of it. So you've got to be, if you're not a doctor or you're not a lawyer or you're not these, then.
Well, like my dad, like he was, so, you know, I was brought up in foster care. So my dad was kind of like, the outside when he was alive, he was like, you know, you should, after college you should go to university and study something, but I was like, but what would I wanted to go, but what you want me to study, I'm not interested in, number one, and two, I was just like, it's just too much hard work, I don't think my brain can cope with that, right, you know, couldn't cope with it right now to be, you know, an accountant and stuff. I was like, I failed at maths at school completely and you want to be an accountant, it's not happening.
So there's an element, and I can never say the word, but I'm going to say intersection. Intersection. I don't want to say it, and it sounds, it comes across wrong, but in terms of like race, culture, your environment, all these do play a thing. So I'm part of the BDA cultural perspective, but we can look at it as looking at neurodiversity, inclusion, and there is such a thing in certain cultures, that pressure, that stigma, that taboo. That's a label. We don't want any extra labels. There are, you know, there is something there. And I think you know, it needs to be spoken about. And our lived experiences from the Black, Brown, BAME, whatever the terminology one wants to associate, you know, from the Asian community, what have you. We've all got a story to tell in terms of that cultural aspect and what it means to us. So having been a careers advisor for over 11 years, I have worked with many young people and parents who have got learning differences or neurodiverse and, you know, trying to sort of talk, kind of navigate, actually, you want me to do this particular degree, like a law degree, but actually I'm more creative. I've had to have many conversations and helping that young person and that parent to work through a kind of, sometimes a compromise, in terms of, you know, where they go. So I agree with you, but it's almost like another conversation when we're talking about black and neurodiversity. There's so many, sometimes, you know, opportunities are not there. Like for me, I can speak for myself, those opportunities to excel at the time weren't there. And as I said, I can only assume, growing up in Hackney, East London, that it, at the time, because it's different now, but there is still things that goes on, you know, working class young Black girl, I didn't have opportunities, and I'm just keeping that. And there could have been some racial aspects there that I'm going to leave it there, but you know what I mean. So I was disadvantaged. I was disadvantaged in a way, and I definitely think that was a factor. And the fact that, as I said to you, they rather look at the fact that maybe there was abusive things going at home, to why I had psychotherapy, rather than the fact that I wasn't talking or speaking in class or engaging, because the trauma of going to school every day and feeling like I didn't belong wasn't even a factor, even though my report highlights that Marcy was overall really trying, but she just wasn't getting it. There was never kind of, and dyslexia has been, you know, a thing since the, you know, the beginning of 1860, I can't remember the date, but, you know, so it was never, so was that to do with my environment? Was that to be, do with me being Black? So it's so many different things. And I'd like to think that it's changed, but depending on your social and, you know, economical, there's still aspects. And then to get a diagnosis, certain cultural groups may not get that diagnosis because they don't, might not have the financial. So it's a whole thing. And that's why I'm keen to talk about it, that why I'm keen to represent in terms of showing imagery, what shows us, and have doing things like this as two Black women talking and to make it not a thing anymore, like a stigma, because, oh gosh, you're Black, you're female, then there's this, if you're a Black woman, you're aggressive. What is all these things? You know, there's a glass ceiling. When I was growing up and transitioning to adulthood, this was a lot of stuff. So you can get overwhelmed and you just want to go back to a place where you feel safe, because this was just not, why was this happening? Why was it that Black seemed to be a negative thing? And that's how I felt. And that my grandma said, you had to work twice as hard. Why was I having all this pressure and not being the feeling this, feeling like life wasn't going to be fair on me? And then I had the dyslexia, and it's like, are you kidding? You know what I mean? So it is a conversation to have, and it's good we're having these conversations. So hopefully it'll help others to feel that they can speak. But it's a lot of things, and we're not even going to talk about the workplace today.
No,
some people don't. Some people not.
That's really, another podcast on its own. I'm not.
So how people feel and being Black and being in the workplace with other things going on, or going into leadership or what have you. It's big kind of area. So I'm glad you touched on it, but there's so many intersections to it.
It's a book.
It's a book, because I think people need to know, and people want to understand as well, and how they can support and help. So I think breaking the stigma and the taboo is the first one. Us having this conversation and being two Black women is refreshing. And it's not because all my fellow allies and all that kind of thing, it's not that those stories are not important, but it's because it's never happened. Our stories have never been told or shared. And it's really important as well, so people can have aspirations, have role models, or see, I can relate to that, and that's someone like me. I can see me in her or you, or you know what I mean? And we need that to lift each other up, and also for people to understand our differences. There may be no differences at all, just the colour of our skin. Do you know what I mean? So it's good you touched on it, Maddie, but it's, And I wouldn't say I'm an expert. I'm not expert on anything. I could be an expert on myself, but I'm still learning and growing, and I'm still yet to find some of my, you know, I know some of my triggers, but I'm always wanting to learn. I'm always trying to seek to do better or understand. I'm never going to be the finished article, whether I'm dyslexic or not, you know what I mean?
You know, nobody is that, you know. I think there was someone in my life, I can't remember who it was, but I did say to me, is that you're going to learn a lot more when you leave school than what you do in school. You get learned the basics, because you're always learning outside all the time, they say. And it's true, we always are, even if if we want to go and get more education, or we're just learning anyway, because we change.
We're evolving.
So we're always learning something that before that doesn't suit them, what we did back then about 5 years ago is different to what we do in today every time.
But I think it just needs to be more transparent. If we're going back to education, it just needs to be more conversations, not like a surprise, so that when we get to the workplace, even though we're not talking to the workplace, it's not an alien kind of thing, like what is that? Oh, autism. Oh, what? Oh, so that means you can't do that. Why are you putting me in a pigeonhole? Why are you putting me in a box? That's not what that means. This is who I am. Look at me as an individual. So we need to have more. And interesting, I was on a webinar yesterday with one of my children, and one of the things that she was saying is that we need to learn some of the things earlier, like why are we having to have all these, you have all of the like maths, English, history in primary school, why don't we then change it up a bit at secondary school, because it's like we're doing the same thing again, why is it not different subjects? And it was just so interesting to hear a young person's perspective on learning and why sometimes you're not engaged, because it's like, oh my gosh, I've done 5 years of it, then now we're doing it again. Yes, maybe maths and English might be a little bit, you know, important in aspects, but why don't you do it like, okay, we're looking at the space, or we're looking at degrees, so let's put a carpet in the room, what do you need, how do you need to measure that? That's more creative than learning. It's more to life.
Well, how can you make a blanket out of like how many squares to make a blanket to be this big to fit this bit? Do you know what I mean? And that's it.
They need more neurodiverse in the classroom, telling you, look, they need us there.
So why don't we try this way? You'll go, let's try this way. Yeah. And they're like, actually.
And I think it'll be good for everybody. Yeah. Not all people. And I've seen people really high end in terms of like top sets, so to speak, whether they're neurodiverse or not, but some who are more really linear thinkers, and they can't work in teams.
Yeah.
And I've seen that firsthand in groups working in a school, that some children who, so do you see what I mean? It doesn't mean dyslexia is not based on intelligence.
No.
And so it's just really interesting.
I know that. I'm sorry, but that's that really important that needs to be said again. Say that again. What you said.
Dyslexia is not based on intelligence.
Thank you.
It's just the way our brains wired a bit different to look at things in a different way. And that's why we're needed, and we need to be, you know, we've got so many advantages. And I know some of us struggle with it as well. I know firsthand, I've got, you know, friends who struggle with the word dyslexia in the sense that they see it as, they don't see it as a superpower. And so, you know, that's why I think it's important that we just talk about it, so it just can normalize it. And whether it's the struggles, or whether it's the advantages or the superpowers that it brings to anybody and everybody, it's that we're all different in our experience because of so many different factors. And some people really struggle with it, and that's also where mental health can come into play.
Yes.
And I've never quite got that job, or went for that job because they felt that they're neurodiverse, or their dyslexia is going to be the barrier, and they wouldn't go for it. So it's just so interesting. I love learning and speaking to my fellow dyslexics to learn and to be able to be the voice sometimes for them where they can't or don't want people to know. Yeah,
definitely. Okay, then, just like, so what's been some of your best resources though has got you to this far? Like, what, give me like example, just give me two examples from good resources that you have to get you this far that someone could find useful.
Oh, resources. I've never seen it as resources.
Resources.
I don't know if I can say it's like resources. Strategies. Let me see it as a strategy, because the word resources is sort of blanking for me. This shows you how sometimes you have to change the word to make it mean something for you, and that's what's happening here. My brain's not liking resource.
Okay.
I see resources in a different way to strategies and techniques. So one of the things for me in terms of, we could say, resource strategy is that I write everything I'm doing down. Even like here today, right next to me, I've got my diary, and everything, I put lines in it, I put colours in it, so that I can see what I'm doing. And I think I learned that from a very early age. What I would say from a cultural perspective, there was so much routine in my household, in especially focus around house cleaning, but we're not going to talk about that, right?
No.
So I realised in my moving in from, you know, going into adulthood in my late teens, keeping a diary and having a structure and a routine really worked for me. And it's something that I would say is worth trying, or doing a mapping exercise, mapping it out, might having the keyword, okay, this is what I've got to do today. And then I'll put all the links, go to the shop to buy this. It sounds silly, but sometimes we need it really basic this afternoon. So I might have AM and PM. So I might map it out rather than using a diary. So I think that would be one of my tips, because I think that's really served me well when I've noted it down. And people think I'm so super efficient. Oh my gosh, you've got that done, or you've done that. If I don't do that, they don't see the other side. It's like I really need to do that. So I'm not saying procrastination's linked to dyslexia at all, but I'll be thinking about it.
Yeah.
And it's disturbing my thoughts, because I know it's got to be done. Mm-hmm. And that could be overwhelming to go to having that mental health balance. Mm-hmm. And so I make sure I do that. And if I don't tick it off, then I move it on to the next day. Mm-hmm. So it's, and then it feels like something's moving and there's some kind of progression. Yeah. Does that make sense?
It completely does to me. Because
and the next one, and I've learned this more in my adulthood, is to take regular breaks from things and tell myself it's okay, that, you know, I'm worth it. Yeah. And I have to do that self-talk, because I've done so much sabotage and imposter syndrome over the process, which is other conversations, another talk. And that can affect your well-being and mental health as well, just to kind of add that in, because we've talked about mental health. I try to make sure I do a break and talk to myself to say, Marcia, it's okay to have a break. And try to make sure I achieve that particular task as best as I can, because my brain's going at 150 miles an hour a lot of the times, and I'm having lots of ideas and I want to stop and do that. And maybe sometimes for me, I may have to stop, do something else, and then come back to it, because that's maybe the way I work, where somebody else couldn't. They need to finish that task, but I have to accept sometimes my brain needs a break from something I'm doing, because that repetitiveness, I'm getting bored. My brain wants to do something else, but I know that I need to finish off that task because that's required of me. So I might take a break just to go for a walk or do something for me, make a drink, where before I couldn't do that. I got to keep doing, I keep to working, because then I'm not doing anything if I'm not working. And so all of those things, was there so many things that were because I felt not good enough sometimes, but I had to keep doing this to prove that I'm good enough, and overworking and getting burnt out. So I'm learning to be more kind to myself in that way, and saying it's okay as well if I had to do, it seems random, to do something else, even if it's for a little bit, and then hopefully come back and not be off focus. Or sometimes say, no, Marcia, you need to do that. So it's finding what, I think my second tip, sorry, I have to talk about it. This is the neurodiverse. I think of myself. I have to talk about it all and then come to the, and then be able to say the point. So it's finding what works for you. But this is my tip in my sort of little journey so far in life that I found helpful, is being kind to myself, saying it's okay to stop and do something else if you have to, or have a break, go for a walk. It's going to be there and it's going to be okay. Because, and it helps if you're in an environment what understands that and can, you know, value the way you work, because you're still going to get to the same result, but you just may do it in a different way. Some people don't understand that, and that's where pressures can come on. But if you can do it and be assertive in yourself to be able to feel that you're okay with it and make people aware, this is just the way I work, but it's going to get done because I've got a deadline. I like deadlines as well. Does that make sense? I hope I make sense by that.
Yes. Yes, it does. It does. We all do things differently. You know, for me, it's the same. I do write things down in the book. I've gotten a bit more, you know, and I have a paper diary and I have electric diary for me. And people's like, well, I said, because I need the paper diary sometimes, because like I just need it to write it down, because that actually helps. If I write down what it is, I remember it.
Yeah, it goes through. It's like it comes through your brain and goes into your hand movement and goes into, it's more concrete.
Yeah, definitely. So I do that. And the same, the next one's just sometimes visually I need to look at it to go, like, okay, I can't, you know, what is it? Like colour code, exactly the same. That kind of thing, I have them both ways. And I'm the same. Before I didn't do that, take a break. And that's what I've learned right now, is that it's take a break. Like the break could be literally like make a drink. You know, and just make a cup of tea and stop. And that time, you'd be surprised of like, my brain's gone, okay. And then I put things back in, all organize what I need to do, you know.
Yeah, you refresh it, your eyes get refreshed, or and your brain just eases. I didn't say as well, I'd use an electronic one, but at work. And what sometimes my manager says to me, she really likes it because it's so colourful. Because I put colour codes, like green's always going to be lunch. Mm-hmm. So you know consistently. I don't know why. I mean, I am a pescatarian, even though I've gone off fish now. But so to me, that just tells me lunch. And then there'll be other consistent colours, like yellow means something maybe exciting or it's something that's really... So I associate colours to things. So my electronic diary at work is... It's serious, like a rainbow.
Yeah.
But it means something to me. Do you know what I mean? That...
Really good. Oh my God, fantastic. So is there any books that you can recommend? Is there books that people can have a look at that you can recommend as well that we could like read to learn a little bit about people that have achieved this, that, you know, might have this uniqueness and achieving really well? Or is there any, because I know you're starting to write your own book, is there any books you've been in as well that you can people to have a look at that they can read as well?
So this was the first book I was in. Can you see that?
Ooh. Yeah, but it's called what?
It's called Dyslexia from a Cultural Perspective. I think it's the glaze that I've got on the background there. Yeah. You can see it now.
Yeah.
And and this book is from Asha and Martin Holness, if I can pronounce it. I'm actually in the book, as I mentioned. Mm. And this is all about really talking about Black experiences. It's quite academic. It's got quite an academic background. It talks about different things around neurodiversity, but particularly dyslexia. Mm. And then it's got quite a few people, even, his name, Benjamin Safanaya is in it as well, if you can see.
Yes, I read that, but I have that book as well right now.
Yeah.
I opened it when I flicked it. I literally read that one first. I was like, you know.
Yeah, you won't recognize me. It's like a very, can you see that? That's me, that's me. So that's, so that was the first book. And I think that was, can I say the word enlightenment?
Yes.
It's when it started to all come together, my thoughts and my... Yes. My confidence around talking about dyslexia. I've always disclosed, and that's another subject as well, I've always disclosed in my employment, but it was the first time I was actually talking about it. It was no longer masking in a way. I was just like, I'm dyslexic at interview. I'm dyslexic on the application form. But when I get into work, dyslexia is not even a conversation.
Yeah.
And I just get on. So that's when I started to really, when someone said to me, would you be in this book, because I'd love to hear your story as a Black woman about your dyslexic journey, I was like, bless, dyslexic and Black, it all then started to it made sense. And then there's another book that I'm in, so I'll just do the books I'm in first.
Picture book of ACE in dyslexia.
Amazing dyslexia. And the job, and the jobs they do.
Yeah.
I'm actually in this book as well. This is a recent book for 2020, actually.
2020?
What page am I on? I'm like on 50 something. You can't really see it, but
I can see you in the book.
That's a little bit of a chapter about me, but there's some really great contribution there. Jamie Oliver, Izzard, I can't say his name properly, but there's loads of great dyslexics. It's quite inspiring. So it's a really lovely visual book. It's some great stories in there. It's a worth for two more. This one is The Creative Successful Dyslexics. Benjamin Safanaya in this book again. But what is apparent just with a lot of the books, even though the bigger picture book, the diversity in terms of, so that's the kind of thing we're talking about, about Black, Black or BAME or, other cultural perspectives in there. We started with this book. We've got a bit more, but this has only got Benjamin Safanaya in it. I mean, there are other people who've got different heritage, but as a Black heritage, And then I've got this lovely book here.
Of Hope.
Yeah, Journey of Hope. This is by Dr. Tracy Johnson. She's an American, and her book is about an everyday guide for adults with dyslexia. So I'm just finished this. It's quite an easy book. It's quite it's not loads of words, and so I'm just still going through that at the moment. So I've got more, but I think I'm going to leave it there.
Yeah.
We, I could probably worry,
we can always, I know a podcast you'd be on that definitely we can add them on. Wow. Don't worry. So that's fantastic. So as you may be aware, I'm a lover of bags as well. And in my bag, I carry quite a lot. I do carry books to clients over in my break when I'm at work, or just generally because I like to like have a look. And not just that in my book. Maddie puts like, because I put it in Maddie's handbag of life. So it's this one I carry in my little head. And I put little tips and guides and quotes and just things that sometimes I need to pull out to give to somebody else at some point. So is there anything that you think that I should put in, or things that I put in? Sometimes it's not quotes. It's like someone told me the other day about drinks, a drink to put in, but I do. It's very healthy, you know, and other stuff, you know, or things like in the yoga world, like things that I should try. And I was like, yeah, someone else should try this too. It actually is all right. Is there anything that I should put in there from you that I can pass on?
Okay. So let me just, I've got a few things I've written down here. Just, you never know when things come up. So I
yeah,
like to
see? Yeah.
So one thing I always use and I say is never give up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, believe in yourself and never give up. Seek support. So in that never giving up is seeking support, asking for help. I think for so long I was scared to ask for help because I thought like I didn't want to put people out. I didn't want to bother people because for so long I was always like, oh, can you help me here? Can you help me there? Oh, and it after a while I just started to be self-conscious and I didn't want to ask for help and I just didn't want to put people out. Some of that is cultural as well. You don't ask people you know, it's I won't go into that, but it's like you don't want to ask people you don't ask people anything. And then I think that's the key for me, that where you feel you can trust somebody or you can speak to people to say, you know, this is what I'm having problems with, do you know anybody, or you know. So that, and then self-acceptance. I think once I started to accept or love myself in that world, that self-love and acceptance, it kind of, I set myself free. And that included, started posting on LinkedIn, which is what I do. I think I've got an issue or something. I'm always posting on LinkedIn.
No, it's like, brilliant. I love watching posts. That's so inspiring, and in different things and stuff, and different articles you put out. And I read, you know, I read them, and I'm like, wow, I didn't know that. And it's very interesting, actually. No, keep going. Definitely.
Yeah, I think, oh my gosh, here goes Marcia again. But I think that started at the beginning of lockdown, and I think for me that's when I actually really found my voice. The acceptance was starting to be there, but when I started to not worry about what it looked like and the spelling, I always say send it, and then okay, if I can see the errors, or someone say, Marcia, that word, no one ever says to me, they must be really polite, there's some grammatic or anything like that.
I send posts sometimes and then a friend will like on a DM we'll just say, oh Maddie, it's like Monday, oh, do you know what I mean? And I'm like, oh okay.
yeah,
or it'd be something like this, you know, that's about, you know, are you meaning this, and just respell this, and I'm like, okay. But number one, I'm like, someone read it, so that's actually a bonus. Someone's telling me,
but at least we're there to feel that for some people. Or my experience, very often, someone said, oh, you've made a mistake, it's like, oh, not again. And you just feel like, oh gosh, I'm always making mistakes, and you just feel like, oh, I'm just not good enough. So you can internalize that, but to come to that, it comes to that point where it doesn't matter anymore. I send it, and then if I have to edit afterward, it's okay, but I sent it. And I think once I came to do, I started with Facebook, to be honest, but then that was more friends and family, and then a few you know, people along the way in the net, building my network. But then when I went to LinkedIn, that's a different kind of kind of platform, and I just said, I'm just sending it. And that, and it's been a year in the making, and that is, it's only been really a year, and that's how I've kind of met you. And so that's what I'm saying. So yes, seek support, self-acceptance, and self-love. And the biggest one, and people used to tell me all the time, and I wasn't seeing it because I was so in it, I was wrapped in it, and I didn't have the confidence and self-esteem to be kind to myself. So kindness, I was so hard, I was so judgmental on myself, so I was my biggest critic, you know. I'll be damaging myself because of how I felt about myself, I guess. And that's why I said about the self-love and the acceptance. but it's to be kind. People say, Marcy, just be a bit kinder to yourself. It's like I was always having to push. And it wasn't good enough for whatever in my head, how I was viewing it for myself. And I was doing good for me, but I couldn't see that. It wasn't good enough. Wherever I learned that and whatever I observed in life, that's how I felt. So now I always say you've got to be kind to yourself. I do get that kind of gremlin come back every so often, but it's not in the level it was. I was beating myself up internally with the kind of self-talk and the sabotage and like talking, thinking, what are you talking about, Marcy? Get off, you know, just stop talking. And I'll be having that conversation while I'm talking. It was just really like I'm having like freeway conversation.
Yeah.
But now I can let those voices stop in the sense that I'm not self-sabotaging myself. So I'm giving more kindness and love to myself and being kind to myself and loving myself and giving internal hugs to say, you're okay, Marcia. Just let it go. You're good. So that's it. I hope that you can understand all those points.
Oh, definitely. Thank you so much. I was going to say a massive thank you so much for being on the podcast today. I so appreciate your time because I know you're a very busy lady. But thank you so much. I want to say a big thank you to my audience as well for listening. It's always a pleasure to have you with me on this journey. I do hope you have a wonderful morning, evening, afternoon, or whatever time you listen to this podcast. I hope you enjoy it. And we'll hope you engage or listen to the next podcast to be out very soon. Have a wonderful day, everybody. Goodbye.
Thank you.